Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. About 6 years ago, stand-up comic Doug Thompson of Cedar Rapids decided his act needed something more, and he turned to hypnosis. Now, hypnotism is his act, and he's traveling the country performing at colleges, comedy clubs, theaters, resorts, and businesses, and he is here in the studio with me now. Hello, Doug.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here.
Good. 6 years ago, it seemed like a long time now.
Well, what was it that made you think that hypnosis might be the direction that you wanted to go?
You know how some people like to just ever change and always recreate? I'm into other things now, too, but hypnosis is what I make my living at. I just wanted to do something different, add on, I guess, expand.
Was there something that you'd seen? Had you seen someone use hypnosis on stage that inspired you?
I did, actually. I saw somebody do it really badly, and I thought, oh, boy, you could do so much more with this. And
that's, what did you see? Tell me about it.
I was actually doing a show during the World Series, and it was a big-name act I was opening for as a comic. And the show after ours, there was hardly anybody at our show because the World Series was going on. And then the show after ours with the hypnosis, it was nearly sold out. He said, do you want to go watch it? And I was like, nay. We went and watched it. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. And he was not very good. And I thought, boy, this could be so much more. It was lacking stuff. And that's where I really got into it. I was like, oh, I know I can do this. And
had you ever been hypnotized at that point?
I hadn't. I've been to some shows, but, you know, that was like at a fair. But then I got under a master instructor and learned it. And now I do it 120 times a year. I do 120 shows a year. I've hypnotized thousands of people. And it's what I make my living as doing. So
okay. How did you learn to become a hypnotist?
It's really not that difficult. What's really difficult to learn is to get people's trust and to be able to do a group of people and keep it all flow. You are literally wrangling cats at that because there's so many different things going on, facets, and to gain their trust while they're up there and make them understand that you're not going to do anything unethical. Unfortunately, there is shows that people can go do that are a tad bit, but they know going in. Mine are not like that. Because I do high schools and colleges and corporate shows, you definitely don't want to be. I don't want to be involved in those type shows, I guess you could say.
Right, so keep it G.
Yeah.
So, okay. Help us understand this because I mean, there are different kinds of hypnosis.
Correct.
When you use hypnosis in your act, tell me how it works. What are you doing?
Mine is solely for entertainment. So what I do is as I have a group of people, I've had as many as 70 people on stage at a big school. Usually I like to keep it around that 15 mark. And then I create kind of a play on stage. I'm giving them certain suggestions, certain things that they're seeing in their mind, they're believing it's to happen. So everything becomes their own virtual reality. So everything I am telling them, they start to believe is really happening.
So but you're taking volunteers from the audience?
Yes. Okay. I always take volunteers. How I build it up is I explain to them what it is. I tell them all about hypnosis, tell them what's probably going to happen. And then I ask for volunteers once I've basically made like, hey, come join me on stage. So I'm getting their trust, explaining to them what it is, and then I bring them up on stage. I ask for those volunteers. I show them how it works with their fingers going together and other suggestibility stuff. Once I explain to them, like, 1 hour of hypnosis is equivalent to 8 hours of sleep, people are usually like, hold my stuff, I'm going up. they want to get that rest. And then I just create kind of a play. You know, it's almost, I have an opening, a middle, and then the ending is where I really close hard and make it vibrant at the end.
So can you tell just from a short interaction with somebody whether they're going to be suggestible, whether you're going to be able to hypnotize them?
That's a great question. I'll explain it to you this way, Charity. When I have people come up on stage, I am looking for certain things right off the bat.
Such as?
Nervousness, if they're moving their feet, if they're not focusing on what I'm saying. I'm looking for certain traits of somebody that's focused on me, listening to everything. The people that are tapping their legs, moving their feet, kind of getting squirrely. Usually I know that they might be not susceptible to it, but they're probably not going to give it the opportunity that they should. I generally move them around if I see that. I look for the people that have been hypnotized before. It's a domino effect. The people that are next to you that get hypnotized, generally the people close to them will get hypnotized as well. They feel their relaxation. If you're sitting next to somebody and they're fidgeting and moving, well, you start to focus on them. So yes and no. I can never tell you who's going to be great until I really get the show going.
Do you weed people out? Do you say,
yeah,
you know what, this isn't going to work?
Yeah, I always send people back. And I explained to them before that not everybody's going to be on stage with me. I'm going to keep the best of the best, those that go the deepest. Because people get hypnotized, but sometimes they don't do much. They just kind of sit there in almost like they're just asleep. So, yeah, I usually tap them on the shoulder and say, it's okay to go back to your seat. Then I have the people that try to fake it. I can weed that out pretty quick. Not that people can't get away with it, but usually I can figure that out pretty quick.
Interesting. So now a lot of people are really skeptical about what you do. I mean, that's got to be the number one question, right? Is this real?
Question. Yeah. And how I always explain that to people is there's two ways. It's been around for years, you know, tracing back to the early Egyptian times, it's been around. But what I always say to people that believe it, that don't believe it, the royals use it. She did hypnobirthing.
Princess Kate?
Yes.
Okay.
You don't think that they're just going to, let's try this out for a tick, okay? Let's see what it feels like. So, yes, it is completely 100% real. Is there people that do it fake? Yes. It's not magic. It's not wizardry. The only way it works is if somebody lets it happen. This is a term that a lot of hypnotists can sometimes get mad. All hypnosis is self-hypnosis. I can't make anybody go there, but I can take you there. So,
tell me about the first time you were hypnotized.
You don't want to be in it and not have done it.
Right.
So, first time I did it was on stage with another hypnotist. You know, unbeknownst to them that I was a hypnotist, I thought, okay, I'm going to just give it a shot. And the first time I didn't get hypnotized, I think I was overthinking it. The second time I did, you know, it's just one of those things that the deeper you go, the better you feel. I don't remember a lot about it. You remember some. It's almost like having a little too much to drink, and you remember certain things.
It becomes a little fuzzy around the edges.
Yeah, and then things come back to you.
Do you have people get hypnotized accidentally in your shows?
All the time. Yeah, I usually explain it. I just was in Atlantic City at the Hard Rock Casino, and I just got contacted last night by a lady that got hypnotized in the crowd, and then I brought her up. I've had as many as 20 go out in a crowd. Usually there's 3 or 4 people. Sometimes I'll wake them up depending on – I'll ask the people they're with, would they want to come up? And sometimes the husband or the wife will say no. And so I just wake them right back up. But I just had a lady the other day. She didn't believe she was hypnotized. Or last night her wife texted me on Facebook and said, I need a copy of that video. She doesn't believe it, because I'd posted a video of this lady on my Facebook page. And she's like, I can't believe that happened. So, yeah, they end up on stage, and that's always the fun ones, because they're like, how did I get up here after the show?
Now, when you use hypnosis during the show, and I've had people tell me about your shows, and the idea that you plant a suggestion that stays with somebody. The example was the people that were hypnotized in your show were participating in a dance contest, mm-hmm. and they believed that they were participating in this big dance contest,
yep.
and that if they won, they might get an email
or
later,
a text, yeah.
right, saying, "Hey, you won, and you get to do this." And so the example that I heard about, the person who was hypnotized all evening after your show kept saying, "Did that email come?
Yeah,
have you gotten a text?" So how long do these suggestions last?
Well, that depends on the person. I usually give it a certain time frame because I don't want somebody just continually asking somebody,
right?
And it wouldn't last for the rest of their life. But it's almost when you work with somebody to quit smoking, those suggestions can last lifelong. But generally, it wears off after a while. They tend to go into the ether and they forget about it. But it can last there for quite a while. If they're truly thinking that, you know, I'm telling them they might have won $1 million. You'd want to know if that email came. I had a girl lose friends one time because I said, we're going to send the text to your friends. And on stage, she said, I'm not that good of friends with them. I don't trust them.
Wow.
And they left her at the comedy club. They were so mad. I bought the lady a cab ride home. I felt terrible for her.
Oh, no. So, I mean, this is a pretty big responsibility. You're
Always
doing
is.
This for entertainment. But And you say you're ethical, but I mean, do you have nerves about that?
Well, now I've seen those are all mistakes. Those are things you learn. Now when I do something like that, I go, keep in mind, these people are under, they're saying things that they really might not believe. They're just saying it in sake of that. So I've covered, you know, you learn from those little mistakes. Now, did I do anything wrong? No, the girl truthfully didn't trust the people, I guess. But what do you say to that? Oh, they're trustworthy, because I didn't want her to go, no, they're not.
Right.
So I just went, okay, move on.
Right. Let's not talk about this.
Yeah, I mean,
anymore.
I've had situations that you know, I had a situation at college where a girl did something that was not good, the way she was acting out something. And I instantly got in front of her and blocked the crowd, and the crowd went crazy. And I said, oh, no, no, and I corrected her in a different way. And the dean of students was at that school, and he commended me afterward. He came up and said, thank you for doing that. You could have went a whole different direction. But I have daughters, and I wouldn't want somebody doing that with them, so I try and steer clear of that. So.
Do you have a pinnacle experience? Was there a time that you were able to do something that maybe you didn't even think you could do with somebody?
No, but I've had people – I've had a lady as old as 85 on stage. I had a lady in Birmingham, Alabama, that was like 65, and she started twerking. I've never seen anything like it. It was fantastic, but yet at the same time, I thought she was going to hurt herself because she was wearing way too high heels. And so there's a video somewhere online of me stopping and going, what are you doing? We're going to get taken off the air. You know, they thought they were in the dance contest, but – I've seen a lot. Nothing really stands out. I've seen a lot of very funny things. You know, some are very funny to me, and some are. I've seen it, but yeah, I've seen a lot.
Now, you're not in any way a medical professional, but you have used hypnosis to help people modify their behavior, haven't you?
Yeah, but when you say medical, it's not medical things I'm doing. What I'm doing is changing people's turning keys inside of them. That might be a hurdle.
So, give me an example.
Somebody wants to quit smoking. Now, if you were to go to anybody to quit smoking, I don't give them medication. I don't do anything like that. I give them find out the reasons why they want to quit, find out the reasons why they think they fail, and then I use those with them to overcome those hurdles. I've used hypnosis for people in sports to help them with anxieties, things that they feel they fail at. One common example was a swimmer I worked with, a young lady that was a swimmer that had issues turning. During her kick turn at the end, and then when she would get on the block, she was having very overcoming anxiety on, I'm going to lose. This person next to me is going to beat me. So what we do is we find out why they feel that way, what can help, and change those. So
it sounds like you've been on a pretty big journey over the last 6 years, from a guy who watched a show and thought I could do that better, and you know,
now don't do that. Now that I didn't mean it that way. What I meant was I thought I could improve. I'm not saying this guy's terrible. I saw a lot of holes in the game and thought I think I could really expand on this. So
okay, all right.
I don't want to come across as like braggadocious.
Okay.
Right. So that. I mean, you've been training, you've been learning a lot about hypnosis. How do you feel differently about hypnosis now than you did when you first started?
Well, I was very scared of it, as anybody was. You know, you feel that I'm not having anybody take control of me. Nobody's going to take control of me. Well, you don't take control of anybody. There's always that moral compass that you will have. So there's times where I'll get to the dance contest and certain people won't do it because they would never do that. So there is a moral compass. I can't tell somebody, go over there and rob them. People's moral compass would get in the way and they wouldn't do it. So I had the same thoughts as everybody before you see it, like, no way. And, you know, that person's faking it. And there's people that you'll see on stage and you think, boy, I don't know. This person's just really outer limits. Their family will come up to me and say, I have never seen so-and-so act like that. And I know the person you're talking about. And at the end of that show, when you asked me about the...
Right, right.
Nobody had ever seen him act the way he did. And, you know, that's a... when people come up to you and go, I can't believe my dad or my husband or my mom would ever do that. So...
it's pretty fun.
Oh, it's fantastic. How it's a great entertainment.
How do you use hypnosis in your own life? You mentioned that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. So is this a tool that you use personally?
I don't necessarily do self-hypnosis a lot. There's guys that do. I don't. I don't feel I have anything. I wish I could do things better as far as focus. My brain is a Rolodex. I have a lot of irons in the fire, whether it's music or animation or making short movies. I just did a documentary for a friend. So I wish I could get more organized, but part of the creative mind is like that. You don't get... Your brain never stops working. And I wish I could fix that, but as my doctor once told me, you'd probably be a lot less funny if you fixed it. But so there's things that, yes, I wish I could, but there's also things that I don't know if I ever want to change that part of my brain. On the way down here, I had 15 different thoughts about 15 different things I wanted to do.
Do you have somewhere that you want to go with hypnosis that you haven't been able to yet?
I had a TV pilot that I did for a game show network. I was sought out online. I was found some of my videos, and we wrote the TV show and took it all the way up to a treatment out in LA and went all the way to budget, and it didn't make it. This is one of the about 84% of them get cut. That was something I still wish I could do. That's a big thing. I thought we were definitely going to get the TV show, but it's not something that I told a bunch of people about, because you don't want to seem like, here it is. That is one thing I would really like to get. I have other ideas that we've worked on for TV shows, but such a hard medium to get into.
What makes a show a success in your mind when you're performing? What makes you feel like you have done all that you can do with hypnosis?
Well, everything I do on stage is 100% every time. I give it, no matter if it's a show of 30 people or if it's a show of 2,300 students at a college. What makes me happy is when people have forgot about their life for that 90 minutes. Not only the people on stage, but the people in the crowd. That, to me, is always a success. When people have forgot about what's going on in the world, their bills, their payments, and a group of people that might not sit together, sit and laugh.
And what do you say to the skeptics who say that's not real?
Come do it. Give it a chance.
Doug Thompson, thank you.
You
so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Doug Thompson is a professional hypnotist. He performs out of Cedar Rapids, performs all over the country at colleges, comedy clubs, theaters, resorts, and businesses. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harrop, Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.